Welcome back to RBKD. It is a Bat Tuesday edition of RBKD, but it has morphed into a John's Jukebox Joyride edition of RBKD. And now he's breaking out the George Michael?
Yeah, the Careless Whisper.
Oh, if I could give you a standing applause, I guess I could. I'm just too lazy to do it, so I'll do the sitting slow clap for you. This is the jam.
Oh, of course it is. That sax solo is everything. And yeah, fantastic. This was a texture request, as have been all the songs I have played thus far.
That's right. Actually, before John turned the Bat Tuesday edition of RBKD into John's Jukebox Joyride, he actually made the Specs text line a request line. So it's still open, 512-337-3776, if you want to get your request in. But the Careless Whisper request, great job by the listeners. Man, you guys... You shouldn't, but you always surprise me with your very, very eclectic musical taste. Mm-hmm. I do like me some George Michael, though.
Yes, sir.
And Careless Whisper. You're, you do the karaoke DJs.
Oh, yeah.
DJing for Common Interest.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't George Michael a very popular karaoke artist?
It's definitely a guy that gets in the rotation every once
right?
in a while. Everyone wants to sing Faith.
Faith.
I am.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's Christmas time, they want to play Last Christmas.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. Some people want to sing that during Christmas time.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, doesn't shock me that George Michael is popular during the karaoke. I would sing some George Michael tunes during karaoke.
So and I'm looking forward to it, Rod. You need to stop by one of these nights.
You know what? That's going to happen. I'm gonna surprise the hell out of you one day. I'm going to roll in there. Not that I'm going to sing, but if I have enough Bud Light and tequila, I might sing.
Well, there you go.
That can happen.
I will make that happen for you.
Right now. By the way, Wednesdays is when my man John is DJing karaoke there at Common Interest. It's from 8 to 2 in the morning?
Yep, 8 to 2 a.m.
So you got plenty of time to get out there. Turns out Lifetime Longhorn Quan Cosby hangs out there every now and then. You might see him in the back chilling. I don't think he sings, though. Yeah. You would know if he sung, right?
Yeah, for real. Yeah.
We would know
immediately. But he's one of the many people who just likes to come and watch the people perform. And it's a good time if you just want to do that, too. So come on by and come by the DJ booth. Say hello.
And he said that actually, he's intimidated. He said the reason he doesn't sing is because the people who go up there are really good. That they're not just jabronis. They're not just, jabronis going up there to do karaoke. Like, they actually have some talent.
When the regulars, a group of them, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to do that either.
No, but trust me, Rod, there's also, with every great person that's singing, there's also a jabroni probably up there having the time of their life.
Exactly.
That's the key. You have to have a good time, and everyone will have a good time with you.
That's why I'm going to be a little bit tipsy. And you let me know the night with the most jabronis. Are present, and that's the night I want to be there.
I'll give you a jabroni count at the beginning of the night.
You're like, Robbie, it's like 70% jabronis in here. I'm there. I'm ready to roll. All right, we got a lot to get into here. We'll talk Texas football to start off the 5 o'clock. Then next hour, we'll get into Rod's rant of the day. It'll probably be a little bit more Texas football discussion. But also, we'll get into an off-the-record, which actually is a college football-related story. Really interesting. Got some ties to my man John, who has Washington State ties. So we got a little inside info on the story. So we'll get into that coming up at off-the-record around 5:45. Let's start with the Texas football discussion, though. The disappointing loss by the Longhorns in a late game collapse after a double-digit lead for the second week in a row. And the Longhorns lose to Oklahoma State. And Oklahoma State, by the way, that's a good football team. And I know some people think they are, and I think they're flawed, but they have a coach that coaches to their strengths. And he tries his best to mitigate their weaknesses. They're not good on offense, so they don't take a lot of chances offensively. They win with great defense. They win with special teams and field position, and that's the way they've gotten to be a top 10 team right now. And that defense, though, and we've talked about it here on the show, that's a lot of that is Mike Gundy 5-6 years ago investing more scholarships, investing more resources, actually going after doing a great job and hiring, Jim Knowles as one of the, best young defensive minds in college football, and also going to a positionless football approach. They don't even recruit specific positions in the back seven. All they do is recruit athletes for the back seven. They put weight on them. They put them in the weight room for a couple of years. Wherever their body grows, that's what they become. Malcolm Rodriguez, the best player on that defense, the linebacker, was probably going to be an all-Big 12 player this year, first team. He started out, came in actually as a quarterback who had was recruited as a safety for Oklahoma State, was a quarterback in high school, then ended up switching to linebacker because he put on too much weight. And they're like, we don't know if he's fast enough to be a safety. But, man, if we can teach him to hit, he could be a hell of a linebacker. Now his background as a safety and as a quarterback has actually helped him achieve a really high level of play as a linebacker. I don't know ideally physically if he's everything you want at linebacker, but intellectually his football acumen is through the roof. And he works well in space. He's a spread baby. He's not uncomfortable in space, which is what the Big 12 tries to do, right? The Big 12 tries to spread you out. The Big 12 tries to create space. And that defense, it basically wants to compress space. It wants to restrict it. They're trying to suck the space, all right, off the field, essentially. And Sark is trying to create space. They do a really good job. That's why they press the wide receivers. You know, they mug the line of scrimmage with their linebackers. And they're trying to restrict and compact and compress the space. And they did a really good job of that late in the game against Texas. And you go look at some of those third and longs Texas has late in the third and in the fourth quarter, they're mugging the line of scrimmage. I'm talking about 9-10 guys all within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage. They have no fear at all of Texas threatening them with the vertical passing game. And that's, you know, and if I started getting into, you know, what my suggestions would be for the Texas offense, how they would remedy their issues. And we'll get into the Texas defense here, too. But I thought the offense probably had the most blame in this loss. I said the defense had the most blame in the Oklahoma loss because you can't give up 25 points in the fourth quarter. Second most points that a PK defense has ever allowed in the fourth quarter since he's been an FBS coordinator since 2010. Can't allow that. And, you know, when Sark was asked by his offensive struggles, he's talking more about the psyche, and he's right about that. I think it's a multifactorial issue as to why this team is, you know, melting down late in games and they can't really execute late in games. That's got to be a part of why, you know, and I think Sark is still kind of learning this team. So it's still really early. It's only 7 games in, and maybe he did misevaluate some positions, over-evaluate some positions in terms of maybe thought the offensive line was better than it was. Maybe they thought the defensive line was better than it was. And maybe they schemed, and game planned according to that over-evaluation or that over, you know, and mis-evaluation, I should say. And that has caused them to have to adjust almost too much in games. And they have failed at times, right? It's about the lack of adjustments and the adversity they face late in games, but they're not responding well to. The coaches are not responding well to adjustments. The players are not responding well to adversity. That's the problem. Coaches need to figure out the adjustments the opponent's making and be able to counter, and the players need to, and I think this is more about leadership, need to learn how to handle adversity better so that it doesn't psychologically put them into a funk. That's what I think that's, and that's probably the psyche that he's talking about. Well, here's Sark. Sark was asked, actually, you know, now after this loss and now the team being 4-3, are you starting now to get to know your team now? And is it fair to say that you're still learning who this team is, especially now that they've been put in crisis situations, fourth quarter games, and that actually kind of has revealed the character of this team?
Well, I think that's fair. You know, I think like anything, you know, practice only shows you so much about individual players, about schemes, about, you know, offense, defense, special teams, and then your overall team. And like anything, as you navigate your way through a season, things show up, and then it's our job as coaches to try to get those things fixed as quickly as possible. And sometimes it's individual players or technique or scheme, or sometimes it's psyche. And to me, coming out of this game, it was about psyche. And now seeing it 2 weeks in a row, really, where we can't play cautious. We can't play trying to hold on. And I think that we do that. I think that we just are hoping the other team might make a mistake. And Oklahoma State didn't make the mistakes. They just kind of kept playing their game. And ultimately, we made the mistakes that that caused them to get back into the game and then ultimately take the lead and win the game.
And the question is, you know, does he have to reprogram these players? Right, with Tom Herman, you had more one score games you were in Tom Herman's tenure than any Power Five program. Tom Herman preferred to win games, you know, holding on for dear life at times. We talked about this on Longhorn Blitz. I mean, Jeff Howe did a great job breaking down these stats that in the last 31 conference games, going all the way back to 2017, the last game of 2017 against Texas Tech, Texas had 9 double-digit leads in those games and end up losing 9 times out of 31. That's a big number. Well, you had double-digit leads in the second half and end up losing the game. That's psychological. When you're playing that many one-score games, anything can be a momentum shifting factor. A call made by a referee, bad or good, a tip pass on the line of scrimmage, an interception, a missed block. Anything tips the scales. That's why you want to stay away from one score games and one possession games, or as many as you can. I mean, obviously you can't stay away from all of them, but you want to try to limit the amount of one score games, because the deeper you get into the fourth quarter, anything can happen. Right, that's I would say Texas kind of reminds me a little bit of Mike Tyson early on. Remember the Mike Tyson, and obviously they're not Mike Tyson. They're not, you know, the heavyweight champs of the world. But in terms of the style that they play, the style that Mike Tyson fought before getting knocked out by James Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson had only been taken past the 6th round, I believe, 5 times in his boxing career. Nobody had ever been able to take him to 5-6 rounds because he knocked you out first. But the belief was that if you can get Mike Tyson in the 7th, 8th rounds, that his technique was flawed, you know, that he drops his hands a lot, he becomes susceptible. That's when he's no longer the ferocious, most fearsome man on the planet. He actually becomes just a flawed boxer because the conditioning, he'd be worn out by then. And for James Buster Douglas, worked out for him. Right, 10th round, even though he had been knocked out earlier in the fight, he got up and he got Mike to that 10th round, and Mike had a lot going on. Of course, later on ended up going to jail. Mike had a lot of distractions. Okay, that's a part of it. but, yeah, once you get Texas to the fourth quarter, like you can get Mike Tyson into those deeper rounds, that's when you can beat Texas. Right, early on, Texas might knock you out like Mike Tyson. It might be a one-hitter quitter, TKO in the early round. Happened to Texas Tech, happened to Rice, happened to Louisiana. It wasn't even a game. Well, they couldn't survive the initial onslaught of the great preparation and the game plan by this Texas staff, which I have complimented several times. But when they've had to adjust, now they got blown out by Arkansas, so it didn't matter. But when Texas had to adjust in Oklahoma and versus Oklahoma State, we haven't really seen those adjustments. They did actually, I will say, there was adjustments in the TCU game. The adjustment was just give it to Bijan. And that worked, by the way. So here, when Sark was asked, you know, after another late game collapse, Texas blown a double-digit lead in consecutive games for the first time since October of 1996. Here is Sark when Sark was asked, you know, what creative process can you use? What can you use at all to jumpstart the offense?
I think that varies week to week. I've been doing this a long time. You know, I think every team, every identity of every team is different. Sometimes you're struggling as an offense and a couple of the guys that you know are your playmakers haven't really touched the ball. So, yeah, they become an emphasis to try to get them the ball to get you going. Sometimes you're struggling because maybe we're not blocking things very well up front. So you're trying to call some things that give your offensive line confidence to go make those blocks so that they can get going. Sometimes it's about the quarterback. And sometimes it's about the play caller of just finding your rhythm and getting your own rhythm back. So, you know, it's always, you know, there's always something for some reason why you're not going the way you want to go. And that as a coach is where you have to be adaptable to do the things necessary to put your team in the best position to have some success to get that momentum back. So, like I said, I've been doing it a long time. Been fortunate to have had a lot of success. Not every game has been perfect. It didn't score 50 points every time we went, but have historically found a way to make the necessary adjustments to be a good offensive football team kind of year in and year out.
Yeah, so he actually hinted at a couple of things you might be able to do. He's not going to give us too much. Like I said, Sark is he's pretty, I think that he's forthcoming. I think he gives you enough information. He doesn't give you a lot, and no coach ever will. But he does hint at certain things that you could highlight, certain things that you could almost kind of promote, if you will, like throughout the game that can help you. And that's what I'll do. I'll get into it in Rod's round of the day. But I do think there are some things that Sark could do. But this is a multifactorial issue. The stat that my man Jeff Howe brought up, that this is something that Tom Herman's teams dealt with. It's going to be hard to reprogram this team overnight about how to close a game, right? ABC, always be closing. Coffee is for closers. And right now, Texas is sipping on tea. They don't get the coffee. They don't get the close. They don't get to go to Starbucks because they can't close out a game. And that is a site. That's something I think it's a leadership issue. Right? This team lost 6 out of 7 captains from last year. So I think some of it can be leadership. Last year, they closed out some games, fourth quarter games, and they lost some fourth quarter games. So this team teetered on the brink last year too. But I think leadership could be an issue because that's about, you know, peer accountability, about execution down the stretch. Remember, after Bijan Robinson scores that touchdown, we're talking about the wholesale collapse, right? All three phases for Texas, or at least offense and defense. Think about how many penalties Texas had in that stretch to keep drives alive for Oklahoma State. You had the hands to the face by Ojemo. You had the personal foul by Ray Thorne, whatever you want to say. Still, those are crucial penalties that kill you in those crucial moments. They also had the offensive line false start. Remember, to start out, the first drive after Bijan Robinson scores that your last touchdown, and hell, you get your last first down, the start of that six-drive fiasco where you have 4 3-and-outs and 1 turnover on downs and 1 interception, their first play, you have a false start. Think about Junior Ungala. You had a false start, put you behind the chains initially. And then you have the players, nice shooting, because you have bobble snap, right? Remember Casey Thompson on that same drive where you have the false start by Ungalau. He, on third down, he bobbles the snap, mishandles the snap. That's done. And then on one of the other 3-and-outs, you have another bobble snap or a mishandled snap or a bad snap, whatever, misdirected snap. That I think that was also on third down. And then that is also a cause for another 3-and-out. So you got player mistakes that are happening. I think there are penalties. So you got untimely penalties coming back to haunt you. So Sark was right when he said, you know, the reason that we can't close out a game, you know, everybody has contributed to that. It's been, I think, the coaches, some of the play calling, which I'll get into in Rod's round of the day. I think it's the players. They have to have some peer accountability. If it's a player-led team, we got to go close it out. It's we got to go. We got the lead. Let's go close it out. And you're not getting enough of that. And I wonder, you know, where the peer accountability is for the team. Like, who's holding who accountable for us missing tackles down the stretch, or for us missing assignments down the stretch, or not executing. That's not all on the coaches and the play calling. Some of that's on the players. So it's something that got to get fixed. So next segment, we'll give ideas, right? We're not just into being critical and criticizing without actually offering up options as to how they can fix the issue and rectify the issue. So I'll give you my thoughts about how Texas can spark the offense late in games and avoid some of these late game funks the offense is getting in. I'll give you that on the other side. And also we'll get into, you know, a suggestion I have for Sark about how to kind of spark, conceptually, to spark his offensive play calling, right? Something to give him inspiration, something to inspire him when he may be in a funk. Because even he admitted, sometimes it's the coordinator. Sometimes it's the guy calling the plays that actually needs to reevaluate and recalibrate. And I think in that game that maybe there are things that Sark could have done to help his players out a little bit more, and I'm sure he's examining that too. So we'll jump into that on the other side in Rod's rant of the day. Always looking for solutions. Coaches are just problem solvers. They got to come up with got to come up with creative solutions to complex problems. All right, so we'll do our best to try to troubleshoot for the Longhorns on the other side. And Roch, rant of the day right here on RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9 and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's rant of the day.
Hold on to your butts.
Welcome back to RBKD. Time for Rod's rant of the day. And yes, we're talking Texas football. No surprise there. We're going to go behind the burnt orange curtain. I got a couple of suggestions how I can help out the Texas football team and Sark gain that spark they need in the second half after the disappointing loss to Oklahoma State and finishing the last six drives of that game with 4-3 and outs, one turnover on downs, and one interception. They were outgained in the fourth quarter by Oklahoma State 170-1. That is not a fake stat. That is a real stat. So we got to remedy that. So Sark's been talking about it. He's been asked about it. And props to Sark for having a Monday press conference, because I believe for a bye week you don't have to have one of those. We've never had a Monday press conference for a bye week. Give props to Sark. He's not hiding from the criticism, hiding from the tough questions. We played some sound from Sark earlier addressing those very issues. But I actually did some research, watched the game for that's my third time watching the game. Really, that's why I need a week-to-week game, because now I'm going to watch that game probably 6-7 times. Ridiculous. I'll probably start watching Baylor film earlier because Baylor's got a bye week coming up too. So we'll get into that. But let's talk about how Sark could spark the Texas offense late in games. One thing, and Sark brought this up himself, one thing I think Sark can do, it's an easy, easy fix. He's talked about in the bye week, they're going to just work more on things they do well, right? He's going to try to figure out things they can hang their hat on. What are our strengths? And we want to emphasize those strengths, almost overemphasize our strengths, to the point that when something is going wrong, when you do face adversity, when you do have a lull or the offense goes into a stall, you can lean on your identities, right? Or things you do really well. Oh, we do this really well, so let's go back to it. This is our bread and butter. This is our moneymaker. Let's go back to it. Now, right now, that's Bijan Robinson, and they tried to do that late in the game. It didn't work, so you need to come up with more creative ways to get the ball to Bijan. But the thing I love about Sark's offense, when I started studying it, the thing you fall in love with is that he has so many cheat codes he uses. You guys have heard me talk about cheat codes forever. I've been talking about cheat codes. You're probably annoyed with me talking about cheat codes. But there are certain little elements and concepts within football that you can use that'll just give you an advantage. Right, it just kind of gives you an innate advantage in certain aspects. Right, that's play action pass is one of those. The RPO game is one of those. And Sark loves the RPO game, loves play action pass. He's big fans of those elements. And if you start looking at his offense, he inundates his offense with cheat codes. And one of them is pre-snap motions and shifts. He loves pre-snap motion shifts. And one of my suggestions before the game was you need the most pre-snap motions and shifts, or the highest rate of them that you've had so far this season, because Oklahoma State loves to mug the line of scrimmage. Where you're talking about cornerbacks praying press, or their linebackers mugging the line of scrimmage in the A and the B gaps. They want to restrict, compress space. And they do that by basically getting in your face. That's how they compress space. And they do it really, really well. That's why they're a great third down defense. Best third down defense in the country last year. 14th going into the game versus Texas. Because they crowd that line to gain. Whatever that yardage to gain is, they crowd it. And they dare you to throw the low percentage throw, which is over their heads, 20 yards or more down the field. Most quarterbacks won't. They'll try to get the yardage to gain because it is a higher percentage move. So he did actually follow my advice. He had a 76% pre-snap motion and shift rate in that game versus Oklahoma State. But here's the thing. It actually dropped considerably in the second half, dropped from 76% for the entire game to only 54% pre-snap motion or shift rate of your plays. And then it dropped to 41%. On the final six drives, where they were abysmal, right? 4-3 and outs, turnover on downs, and interception. So when your offense is struggling, you should have more cheat codes. You should use more of those cheat codes, not less of them. That would be my advice, right? And think about, I always talk about empty formation, how great Texas is out of empty formation. They've been like that for the last 2 years in this game, right? The 58-yard reception by Marcus Washington, the only deep ball they threw, empty form, only deep ball they threw 20 yards or more down the field was out of empty formation. Why not use more of it, right? The Bijan Robinson 8-yard pitch to start the game, the very first play offensively, out of empty formation. In the second half, Texas only used empty formation once in the second half. They only used it 4 plays in the entire game. So more of it overall, but definitely more of it in the second half when you need it, because the stats say you're really good at it. And the one play they used in the second half out of empty was a 6-yard reception by Rojo, and they don't use Rojo that much either. So that's something I think you can do. Like I said, more cheat codes, not less. How about this little stat? You know when Texas targets its running backs? When they target their running backs, they only have 3 incompletions on the season. 26 targets, 23 receptions anytime they target the running backs. Matter of fact, Rojo and Keelan, 9 of 9 when they are targeted. Bijan is 14 of 17. I would target the running backs, and I'd play running backs more, right? The 2-back sets, I always talk about Texas, how good they are in 2-back sets. They're averaging more yards per play out of 2-back sets than they are the entire year in yards per play, right? But they had 9 such plays in that game, and they only had 2-back set formations or personnel packages in the last 17 plays when they had the 4-3 and outs and the 1 interception and the turnover on downs. Why not more? And one of those was the empty formation with Rojo. Why not more? Matter of fact, the most creative play they had in the last 17 plays was a 2-back formation. If you remember, they have, in a pistol, they have Bijan right behind Casey Thompson. It's 2nd and 10, I believe. They have Bijan right behind him. They have Rojo offset to Casey Thompson's right. And they shift Bijan to the same side as Rojo. Almost using the go-go offensive sets that Brennan Marion used when he was with Howard. Remember I brought that up a year or so ago as suggestions how Sark could weaponize the 2-back sets, where they basically used a go-go formation. So Sark's doing his research, and they had Kelvonte Dixon. It was 20 personnel. He was on the 1 receiver side to the boundary. They had twins to the field. They motioned Kelvonte Dixon to trips, and then they run the speed option to the boundary with Bijan and Casey Thompson. It lost 2 yards. It was the most creative concept they had used, but ended up losing 2 yards. My point is, you should have more 2-back sets because you're averaging more yards per play out of 2-back sets than you are as an offense the entire year. Use more 2-back sets, not less of them. Bunch formations, I was a big advocate of using more bunch formations in the game versus Oklahoma State because they like to play press man, and DBs will play levels or play off when they have to deal with a potential starburst release by receivers with a bunch formation because they can release in so many different ways. So he actually took the advice. They had their highest rate of bunch formations in a game versus Oklahoma State of the season, 27%. But the Kim Kardashian, Nicki Minaj, Serena Williams size, Cardi B size, but in the last 17 plays, those dreaded last 17 plays we talk about where they had those 4 3 and outs and the 1 turnover on downs in the pick, only 17% of bunch plays. So these are not huge discrepancies, huge disparities, but, why use less cheat codes when your team is struggling, when you should be using more cheat codes, right? That'd be part of my advice. And I don't know if the offense is struggling because he's using less cheat codes or if he's using less cheat codes and that's why the offense is struggling. I'm not saying it may not be either or. It may not be the chicken or the egg, but that's just a suggestion. Something else, and I pointed this out yesterday. I'm a big, movie guy, love watching movies. And I love the Easter egg craze in movies where they plant a little scene or some little clue in the movie that foreshadows something else that could be happening in, a later movie or a prequel or a sequel or whatever, like some movie in the same universe. Well, Sark should start doing that with his plays, and he doesn't do it enough. And what I mean by that is I should be able to recognize him setting up his opponent early in the games, and I don't see that. He should be able to reap later what he sows in the early quarters of the game. I'll give you an example. Casey Dunn, Oklahoma State's offensive coordinator. Remember him? He kept running that speed option. He kept running it early in the first quarter. Kept running the speed option. Oh, he ran like 3 times in the game. and it never got any yardage at all. Turns out it was all setting, it was setting Texas defenders up for the speed option reverse that they ran in the third quarter. And they got a 17-yard gain. As I kept saying to myself, why are they running the speed option? Texas hasn't fallen for it once. And they kept running it. Turns out they were just setting Texas up for it later. They were just planting seeds. All right, a little Easter egg for you. Speed option reversed in the third quarter. Popped it. Perfect timing. On that same drive, they actually tried, because they had been running a lot of quick screens, right? A lot of quick game against Texas. They did a screen, attempted a screen double pass against Texas on the same drive. Because they wanted to, they were trying to go for the knockout blow on that drive. They attempted the double pass. They didn't execute it right. Ended up being an incompletion. But it was on that drive. You can see they were, that was the drive that Casey Dunn decided to execute his money plays. Plays he had been setting Texas up for throughout the game. Right? The bootleg was the same way. Remember the bootleg action they kept running? They ran the bootleg to loosen up that Texas defense. Texas started playing a lot of 4-3. A lot of 3-4, excuse me. Look, four linebackers on the field, their base personnel. So the bootleg action would force those linebackers, right, to not only have to process more information, but you could occupy their eyes, and it loosened up that run defense for Texas. So they ran the bootleg four times. One was a penalty, but they kept throwing it outside. They threw it to the wide receiver once. They threw it to a tight end on the bootleg. They threw it out to a fullback who was out in the flats. And then what they do in the red zone, when they got down, they ran the bootleg. They threw it inside to a wide receiver who found a soft spot between the linebackers and the safeties. And they've been setting Texas up with that bootleg. Because they've been setting Texas up because they've always been hitting the outside, hitting the fullback in the flat, hitting the tight end who had been a delayed releaser, hitting the wide receiver who had ran an out route. And then they decided, nah, we're going to bring this crosser, all right, all the way across the field, found a soft spot, and they hit the Texas linebackers with it in the red zone, and that ended up being a touchdown. So I think they did a really good job of setting Texas up. Right? I'm still talking about those Easter eggs, like a boxer, right? You're throwing the jab, I'm not throwing the jab to knock you out. I'm throwing the jab to set you up for the hook. I'm throwing the jab to set you up for the cross. I'm throwing the jab to set you up for the uppercut and eighth. That's what I'm throwing the jab for. Because at one point, you got to defend yourself against the jab, right? So for Sark, that would be one of my suggestions. And you know what? A great example of that would have been the deep ball. Right, I always say Texas threw one deep ball. They threw one ball 20 yards or more down the field. That was to Marcus Washington. If they'd have thrown more deep balls in that game, go watch the third and longs they have to face later and how aggressive Oklahoma State is at the line of scrimmage. They're mugging the line of scrimmage. They got 9 of their 11 players within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage, mugging the wide receivers. Why? Because they had no fear of the vertical passing game. Texas didn't threaten them down the field with the vertical passing game. If you'd have thrown more passes early in the game, you know, you can reap what you sow a little bit later in the game, because I think they'd have been less aggressive, because then you could have threatened them with the deep ball. You only threw one. There was no need for them to worry about it. And by the way, that one you threw connected. And same thing with Keelan Robinson, right? You played Keelan Robinson, like he got 2 touches in the game. One was a handoff out of 20 personnel. The other was that 25-yard jet sweep that you got to the edge on with Keelan Robinson. Think about if you'd have ran that multiple times, you'd have forced Oklahoma State to defend the edges, meaning you'd have forced them to widen out a little bit so they wouldn't be so compacted, so compressed, and then you could have found a vulnerability by making them stretch or stress that defense horizontally. So you didn't stress them horizontally enough, you didn't stress them vertically enough, and look how compacted and compressed they were, restricting your space late in the game. That's why you plant those seeds earlier, so late in the game, they'll back up. They will back up. They will. They'll back up because they'll fear that deep ball. Trust me, as a former DB, you're scared of that deep ball. You don't want to give that up. So I think things like that quarterback run game, I know you don't run a lot of quarterback run game, but you probably should use it because it forces the defense to have to account for the +1 in the running game. And I got to put a spy on them. It's going to make me vulnerable in other areas of my defense. But Texas did not force that defense to account for enough threats, especially without Jordan Whittington. So the RPO game suffered. The third down you suffered. That was missing Jordan Whittington, and you didn't have enough layers or complexity to the offense to threaten that defense late in the game. And Jim Knowles adjusted. We got to do better than that. All right, we'll come back. Off the record, when we come back, we'll talk about the controversy in Washington State. All that and more right here on RBKD, right here on 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260.
D.D. Megadoodoo, I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get the rain and comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East. Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
Welcome back to RBKD, and welcome to another edition of Off the Record. And this story went viral, kind of took the national sports conversation by surprise earlier today. Maybe this was late yesterday. But Washington State head football coach Nick Rolovich has been fired from his position as head football coach at Washington State for refusing to get vaccinated. The university announced Monday four assistant coaches were also fired for not being vaccinated as well. Both university and the state of Washington have implemented a vaccine mandate. Now, the deadline to receive a COVID-19 vaccine for state healthcare and school employees in Washington was Monday. Of course, he did not did follow the protocol, and they fired him. His quote is, "I don't think this is in my hands. I've been settled for a long time on it. I believe it's going to work out the right way." I guess it didn't work out the right way. He's 1-3. He started the season 1-3, and they had three straight wins, so now they're 4-3. John, you are a Washington State Cougar.
That's right. Go Cougs.
Now, what? I'm sure you know more about this than us Texans. What are your thoughts about the firing of Rolovich because he wouldn't take the vaccine?
It's certainly not surprising, especially with his hot takes since July that he made his official stance on it in July. And since then, he's kind of sent a lot of mixed messages, a lot of like, I think players should be vaxxed, and he took that back too. And he's been going back and forth, but yeah, with that, not to mention his lackluster performance as head coach and just in terms of just the numbers alone, it's not surprising that this happened, even though it was not at all in WSU's hands whatsoever. Yeah. You know, it's the best excuse in the world to have, you know, the governor be able to give, like, oh, sorry, nothing we can really do about it.
And they just hired him, though, right, in 2020?
Yeah, just right after Leach left.
Yes, okay.
So he's only been around for, like, 1.5.
He's been around for, like, 2 years, basically.
For 2 years, yeah, but if you put the seasons together, he actually coached, it comes up to like one.
Because they had a half a season
half
or whatever
season
for 2020
yeah,
for COVID.
Exactly,
yeah.
So maybe he didn't have his chance to shine with us. But, yeah, it's not surprising, though, because Inslee put the mandate for government employees, and he is technically the most
highest paid government employee.
$3.2 million a year.
I guess there's nothing you can do.
What can you do?
If he does it, if he's drawing a line to saying, and he has the right to do that, saying he won't get the vaccine.
Exactly. He has the right to do it, and they have the right to say, sorry, we can't keep you around.
That's exactly right.
No rights were crossed here.
Yeah, I think he knew it was coming, and yeah, they might have wanted a reason to fire him. I mean, I'm not saying they wanted a reason to fire him, but it could be used as a convenient excuse to find maybe an upgrade over him to find a better coach.
It's true. He has had big shoes to fill with Leach leaving.
Exactly. And I think they might have been caught a little off guard by Leach leaving. And then maybe they rushed into this, and maybe now they're realizing, hey, we kind of rushed into this thing. Can you know, let's use this as an excuse to get him out of here. And then we can find a guy that may be better for this job. I also heard that Jeff Banks, the Texas special teams coach, is one of the candidates up for the Washington State job because he went to Washington State, I believe.
Well, that's a good point, yeah. That'd be fun.
And Jeff Choate, who basically is from Idaho, I believe, because he's from a little town outside of where my wife's family is from. He's from the Pacific Northwest, too. I believe he coached at Montana State, if I'm not mistaken. But he spent a lot of time up there, too, Jeff Choate. So I think Jeff Choate's name's been thrown around, too, as one of the possible candidates. Both of those coaches are on the Texas staff. So
it's true. But what do you think about the interim coach that they have announced? Jake Dickert?
Is he a strength and conditioning coach or special teams? Who is he? Strength and conditioning coach?
Yeah, he before joining his staff, he spent 3 years at Wyoming.
He's a defensive coordinator. Defensive coordinator. Jake Dickert.
Yes, Jake Dickert.
You know what? If he does a good job, this would be a great interview for him if he actually does a good job for the rest of the season.
If he can pull it off.
Yeah. He might get that job. Because I don't know how highly coveted Washington State is. I think what Mike Leach has made a more high-profile job. That was smart
100%.
For them to hire it. So it's a more high-profile job. So maybe you can get the next young up-and-coming coach and maybe kind of consider that more of a stepping stone.
I could see that happening, and if he can pull it off, it's going to be made even better with all this noise around it, you know? Can you imagine all the, like, distractions?
I know, I'm trying to think of what other states, because there's got to be another coach in this situation, but maybe other coaches were just like, no, I'll get the vaccine. I make millions of dollars a year. I'll get the vaccine. Yeah. I don't like it. I don't agree with it, but I make millions of dollars a year, so I'm sacrificing. It's for my family and so I can just be a football coach, which is my dream.
Exactly. And Washington is one of the many states that are like the highest, strictest policies right now. It's a completely different climate to like Texas because you still need masks.
Great point.
And going into some restaurants, you have to have your vaccine card. It's very strict up in Washington, and for good reason. Because
the West Coast is a little strict. Stricter than most parts of the country.
That's exactly it. And with Washington, it got hit with the most COVID numbers throughout the
early on,
and even when all the spiking happened, Washington's numbers were some of the highest, even with the protocols in place.
I was in Washington right before COVID hit. We flew to Idaho for Christmas. And we flew back through Washington. It was there.
Yeah.
And my wife, she believes it too. I think she got it.
Yeah.
She thought she had pneumonia. She went to the doctor and they were like, we don't know what's wrong with you.
Yeah, I had a couple of family and friends who had a sickness that was like COVID before anyone really knew about it.
Yep. It was like late December, early January, and she was sick. I mean, I thought something was wrong with her. I told her to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was it or not. I have no idea. Maybe she's got to say. Oh, one other story real quick.
Yeah, about the similar vein. Yeah.
COVID-related stuff. The NHL has suspended San Jose Sharks forward Evander Kane 21 games for submitting a fake COVID-19 vaccination card. The Vancouver-born player will forfeit about $1.68 million of his $7 million salary for the season, with the money going to the Players Emergency Assistance Fund. See, that's why I would get it. My first time I've gotten a vaccine as an adult has been the COVID vaccine. I got it because my wife was passionate about it, so I'm a good teammate. But if I was a professional athlete, I'd have got it because that's my money. I mean, I'm a professional athlete, so I have to be able to play, accessible. So I would have got it. If I was playing at Texas as a student athlete, I probably would have gotten it too. If I was just a regular old jabroni, I don't know if I'd have gotten it. But as a professional athlete, I definitely would have got it. Yeah.
Sure.
I'm about playing. I've done anything to play.
Yeah, I was going to say. If we went back in time and did the whole COVID fiasco when you were, on the rise, you would 100% gotten the vaccine.
I'd have done anything to play. Yeah, they just shot me up with all kind of stuff back then to play. They shooting guys up right now with stuff they have no idea what it is just so they can play football. The vaccine would have been justified. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll get into the last hour of the show on the other side. Thank John for his little insider knowledge there on that Washington State situation. We'll come back. One more hour left in the show. We've got some NFL news and notes and nuggets to share. All that and more on RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9, and AM 1260.